Welcome to episode 23 of The Month End. Really excited about having Grant Christopher on the podcast today. Grant is the co-founder and partner at Bridge Finance Group. How are you doing today, Grant?
Doing well, Brad. Thanks for having me on today.
Yes, I'm super excited. We're going to kind of get into the topic of equipment financing for CPG brands, which I think is a topic that may not, maybe a lot of people haven't even thought about or kind of dived into. So I'm really excited about it. So before we get into more details and specifics on that topic, let's get a little bit of a background on you, Grant. So Grant, what's your background in the CPG space? Why Bridge Finance? Just kind of give us a little understanding of where you come from.
Yeah, appreciate it, Brad. So kind of fell into the equipment financing business. So I've been an equity investor in the space for close to 12, 13 years. Kind of a family industry. My brother is a serial entrepreneur in the space, Clayton Christopher. So he had created a couple of brands within CPG, and we had been investing on the equity side. And one of the companies that we were invested in was growing and needed capital to expand their production facility. And we were fortunate enough to be involved on the inside of this business. So we saw a couple of the term sheets coming across and looked at each other and kind of thought to ourselves, I think there is an opportunity here to have an equipment financing and leasing business that's focused on early stage high growth CPG companies. There's not a lot of equipment leasing and financing companies out there that are focused on the space. They're kind of industry agnostic. One day they may be leasing IT servers. The next day they may be leasing truck trailers. And then all of a sudden they're looking at a CPG company and manufacturing and production equipment there. So we felt like we had an edge that we knew the industry and these businesses better than the other ones did. So it's kind of how we got our start about 6 years ago.
Awesome. Awesome. Glad, super excited for this chat. Like, as I said, yeah. as an accountant here and seeing all the debt versus equity amounts in the various balance sheets of our clients, it's always interesting. So kind of stepping back from just overall like equipment financing, right? Like, so Bridge, you guys are in what, Dallas, Texas? Do you guys support clients locally, nationally? What's your portfolio of clients?
So we're all over the US. I would say, when we first got our start, we were pretty heavily concentrated within the Texas kind of Austin area, as you well know. That's kind of become a hotspot for CPG. I would say outside of Boulder, it's a pretty large hub within food and bev. So when we first got our start, that we were pretty heavily concentrated within Austin, but since then we've grown. We're all over the US. I would say that the majority of our business, and I say majority, it's not over 50%, but it's probably in California. Gotcha. So we're doing business across the spectrum too. Brands that are, anywhere between 1 to 2 million in top line annually, working with a brand that will probably eclipse 80 million this year as well.
Good to know. Good to know. So like, as we kind of go through this thought process of just CPG brands, right? Hey, I'm founding or creating a product. I'm working with co-mans or different people to produce the product. So from your perspective and experience in the space, like how should the decision-making of, I guess, the CEO or the founder of that brand go through from whether or not to leverage a finance shop like you to lease or buy an equipment versus kind of just going straight with co-man? I guess, can you walk through that like life cycle a little bit and that kind of thought process of where it could be a good point for them to kind of start thinking about this?
Yeah, sure. We work with brands that do all of their manufacturing in-house and also work with brands that use a co-packer, because there are plenty of times where they're using a co-packer, but that co-packer just isn't willing to purchase that piece of equipment specifically for that brand, So we work with a handful of companies where they may use 10 pieces of equipment at a co-packer facility, but they may own, or in this case, lease another 2, 3, 4 pieces. But they're using, the co-man's labor across the board. So you know, it kind of varies. I've had this question come up in the past of, you know, when should we or why should we go and manufacture 100% in-house or use a co-man or, you know, what have you. And it, I think it just kind of varies and depends on the company. You know, I think more, you know, if you're alcohol based, you definitely, there's more of a trend for you manufacturing in-house as opposed to using a co-packer, whether it's craft beer, kombucha, you know, I say alcohol, but non-alc as well. Kombucha, the majority is in-house, is manufactured in-house. You know, and then food products as well. I think it depends on the type of food product. Mm-hmm. That you're in the space and subcategory that you're in within food, can kind of drive you to manufacture in-house. I mean, especially if it's some sort of proprietary process, that of course, you know, always leads to manufacturing in-house, but we see that trend, you know, of specifically on food products of, you know, coming out of probably a shared kitchen or a commissary kitchen, and then they have to make that decision of, you know, whether to go the co-packer route or manufacture in-house. I mean, I don't think I'm saying anything that people already don't know. It's margin accretive to manufacture in-house. However, it has its challenges as well. So I think it just depends on the company and the brand.
Yeah, we definitely see the spectrum of in-house versus turnkey co-man versus mixed supply chain and different decision points of kind of where you're at. And they all make sense at different ventures and in different products as well as different, you know, ages of the business. So,
and I think, you know, sorry, Brad, one point I want to, I think you got to have the expertise to be able to manufacture in-house, you know, it just kind of depends on the strength of the management team and the CEO and entrepreneur.
Yep, I agree. From you guys providing, you know, financing as well as leasing, right? So there's like different ways that they can own the property, own the equipment, you guys finance it, or you guys can own it and they can lease it, or how does that work?
Yeah, we really structure everything as an equipment lease, where we own the equipment and, you know, we lease it to the brand.
Gotcha. Over a 2 to 3 to 4 year period or whatever makes sense from
on aspect. We're anywhere between 2 to 4 years. So
gotcha. And then when it's paid off, do they then own it? Is it a capital lease?
No. So it depends, you know, for the most part, they there is a buyout at the end. One way we differentiate ourselves, I think, from a lot of other leasing companies out there is that that buyout is predetermined. So it is typically at a higher amount. So we structure these as operating leases, just given that the buyout can be anywhere from 25 to 50%. And, you know, at the end of the term, they have the option to exercise that buyout or they can extend the lease. And then at which point at the end of the extension, there's another buyout option, or they can convert to a month-to-month or return the equipment.
Gotcha. All that makes sense. So if somebody is going to come to you and start the conversation, what is the like request list? What do you guys need to underwrite, review? Like, what do we all need to prepare before we even come to have a conversation with you?
Yeah, no, good question. You know, it's nothing out of the ordinary, especially if you've run a process to either raise equity or look at, you know, your traditional ABL type facility. We're going to look for, you know, historical financials, P&L balance sheet, cash flow statement. Also be looking for a forecast as well with those three financial statements. You know, the type of equipment, of course, we're gonna underwrite that. You know, cap table, we want to see the list of investors. We typically work with brands that are institutionally backed by some venture capital or private equity firm. I'm not saying that's a prerequisite, but that's typically the types of companies that we work with. You know, and outside of that, it's just, you know, your certificate of formation. Again, nothing really out of the ordinary. I would say one probably diligence item that we do request that you may not get from another equipment finance company or even lender is we do ask for velocity reports. You know, that's a big deal to us. We like to see how the product's moving on the shelf.
Yep. I mean, that definitely makes sense. And that is a kind of an abnormal request, I guess, for a, you know, a facility like yourself. When you're looking at, you know, an underwriting and reviewing the financials and the numbers, clearly, like just by saying velocity, you're looking at sales. I mean, is there like a couple top metrics? Like, should our clients be focusing, or should these folks be focusing on profitability, on top line growth, on cash on hand, you know, inventory turn? Is there specific things to kind of think of for this, or is it, you know, a consolidation of everything into one and figuring it out, you know, or analyzing that way?
Yeah, it's a mix, you know. I wouldn't say that, you know, 90% of the businesses that we work with are unprofitable. You know, that's pretty much why we started this business, was that we saw a trend of companies that, you know, weren't profitable yet. They're growing top line. They're trying to capture as much market share as they can. And so they're burning money on a monthly basis. But they weren't bankable from a traditional banking standpoint, you know, because they didn't check every box kind of post 08, 09 that you have to check in order to go get a loan from your Wells Fargo's or your you know, Bank of America's. And so profitability, you know, is something that, you know, we like to see visibility towards profitability. We don't want to, you know, invest in a brand or lease equipment to a company that is just going to be burning money in perpetuity. I think we all agree that's not really viable these days. And so, you know, we look at the investor, the cap table, how much money and equity they've raised in the past, you know, top line growth, kind of margins, you know, like to see some strong margins. And then, yeah, the velocity reports is something that we dig into as well. You know, it's something that if a company has to trench, you know, and kind of hunker down and survive, and they're selling well within stores, you know, they're not going to get cut. So it's something we look at.
Gotcha. General question, because we, you know, we have a tax team here, so we deal with a lot of just CPG brands, tax returns, entity structure.
Yeah.
Is there a specific entity structure that you guys prefer, and maybe folks in your industry, do you prefer a C Corp, an LLC, partnership, or does that not matter? Because clearly there's a ton of nuance. There's a ton of reasons why you do it. There's a lot of people that start out as LLCs, become a Delaware C Corp over time. But I'm just wondering if you guys, you know, from your like requirements or best practices, like prefer anything.
Yeah, we've seen it across the spectrum. So we've got no preference. We work with Delaware C Corps. We work with Texas-based LLCs, California-based LPs. So we've seen it every which way, and we really don't have a preference on our end.
Do you guys do anything internationally?
We do not. We have looked at a few companies that are based internationally and have a presence here and a facility here, actually more on the co-packer side than the brand side, but we haven't gotten one across the goal line yet.
Gotcha. Oh, that makes sense. What is like an average, like, you know, lease rate, interest rate, or, you know, debt rate, like, like what is something to think, or just give us a range or kind of.
Yeah, good question. You know, one way that we get really competitive is we've got a, what I feel is a strong advance rate. So we can go up to 95% advance rate on the equipment. So, you know, as an example, if it's $1 million worth of equipment, we can, you know, potentially go up to $950,000. Our rates are typically in the low to mid teens. So, again, while we're not going to be as cheap as your, you know, traditional lenders from a bank, we have zero covenants. We're non-recourse, which means we don't ask for personal guarantees. And then again, our strong advance rate. So we actually do win opportunities over banks because of what I feel those three reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, with your, you know, industry experience, as well as those, the high advance rate, that means there's minimal cash up the door up front, which really helps a small business, you know, to succeed. And then clearly your, you know, you're leveraging, or your collaterals, that piece of equipment really at the end of the day.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. The other kind of question, a couple things in terms of like, is there a world where as a brand moves forward and they're working with you in 12 months, do you require like renewals? Is there things that can be conscious of outside of just paying your bills month over month? I'm sure you or your lease bills, but is there, you know, anything to kind of keep clear of as during this 2 or 3 year lease period that you have, or any requirements you have for brands?
Yeah, no, we try to stay as hands off as possible. You know, as long as you're making your payments, we don't want to get involved in your business. So as long as you're making the payments, we're happy. You know, one of the things I would say is that we do work with companies during their entire life cycle. You know, I mean, we just actually signed our 7th schedule with a brand out in California. Mm-hmm. That we started working with about 4 years ago. So they just continued to expand and we just expanded with them. So it's been a great partnership.
Awesome. Yeah, I was gonna ask that. Is your life cycle like clearly, you know, increasing or buying more equipment, leasing more equipment to brands? Do you guys do, you mentioned at the start that you guys had an equity investment and then decided or found out like this is a great opportunity. Do you guys also, will you do equity investments in these brands when you're already kind of a debt holder here or a financer up for them?
No, we typically don't, you know, we don't ask for warrants on our offers. You know, there's a couple of companies that we're invested on the equity side too. We kind of like to keep separation there in the event of a conflict, you know? So if we want to chase it on the equity side, we will, but you know, if we want to chase it on the debt side, it just depends on kind of what we feel may be the best return for us, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, we just like to kind of keep it separated. So there's not any conflict though, for the most part.
Awesome. Do you guys have any plans at any point to get outside of CPG, or are you just going to kind of hunker down in that space?
I still think there's a lot of opportunity within CPG. I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface here. We made a hire for a vice president of business development recently, and he's out there just pounding the pavement, making phone calls, going to conferences. So I feel like there's still a lot of opportunity within CPG, but you know, we like to keep our options open. We're entrepreneurial at Spirit. And so, you know, not going to turn away an opportunity within a different category if it makes sense for us to go into it.
Yeah. Love it. Just a question I'm thinking here. I'd love to hear it. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but is there a kind of two questions? Number one is there like a scenario or a situation that through Bridge, you know, your brand here and your relationship where you feel like you saved somebody, or you know, they came out of a really bad situation because of how the finance, you know, structure works versus in the past? And I'm going to ask on the other side, is there also a nightmare scenario or a bad scenario that exists? And again, like this, you know, this is anonymous, but I'm just wondering if there's kind of some general kind of thoughts or, you know, lessons learned from that.
Yeah. I mean, we pride ourselves on our reputation. You know, I think we're very borrower friendly. And so we work with brands all the time. We understand the challenges that they face as an early stage kind of high growth company. 2020, we worked with a couple of companies that ran into liquidity issues, where, you know, we just deferred their payments for several months, until they were able to go get the liquidity and equity that they needed to continue operations. So, we feel like, you know, again, we kind of pride ourselves on our reputation. I think if you went and talked to any of the CEOs or founders that we currently work with, they would say that, and I hope they would, that we try to, you know, strive to be a good partner for them. And then, you know, on the flip side, you know, of course, there's been, you know, scenarios where unfortunately a brand has gone out of business, you know, but we've worked with those companies, you know, to get those assets, and then, you know, replace them or you know, release them or sell them to another company. But again, I like to think of ourselves as good partners, always keeping the communication, line of communication open, and, you know, trying to solve problems together.
Awesome. Since COVID, I mean, you bring it up, you know, last 2 years has been crazy just in the entire world, you know, and then, you know, filtering down in the CPG space. Is there been any kind of trends from what you guys see in the space and from a, you know, from a co-man or supply chain standpoint? Clearly supply chains have been impacted globally across all industries, but I'm wondering if there's any trends or things that you guys have seen from your perspective, you know, from the last like 2.5 years in terms of where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, I would say generally most companies, if they did survive through COVID, came out stronger. I think most people would agree within the industry that, you know, there's probably a lot of fat to be trimmed, and they did that. And so if they were able to survive through COVID, you know, they came out stronger, better margins, able to produce more with less headcount. And so, you know, there are challenges right now within the supply chain, raw materials, shipping, et cetera. But I feel like, you know, the companies that we've talked to, I mean, even as recently as the last 4 to 5 to 6 weeks, I feel like we've kind of hit our peak a little bit on that. And things are starting to get a little bit better for the most part. Not saying that's, you know, 100% across the board, but most companies are that we've talked to have said, yeah, I think we've kind of hit our peak on, you know, supply chain issues and raw material cost increases, et cetera.
Yeah, that's kind of the general feel it feels to be.
Yeah. Like. Are you guys, I mean, you talk to a lot more brands than we do. So are you feeling the same way?
Yeah, I feel like there was a really tight period for a minute and really long delays, high costs, a little unknown circumstance. It feels like we're getting back to more of a normalcy. Again, I agree. This is not across the board, but it just feels like there's more known aspects related to cost, related to supply chain situations. So I would agree with you on that. From a lead time perspective, just with you guys, like, what is the turnaround time of getting, you know, coming in the door, getting approved, slash also how long does it take to get the equipment? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, good question. You know, for us internally, our process typically takes about 3 to 4 weeks. You know, once we get that, that the diligence items that we need, we'll underwrite it here internally, go to our investment committee, and then turn around a term sheet to the company. Once we'd agreed upon terms, it's a pretty seamless process after that. We do about 98% of our underwriting before we offer a term sheet. So, gotcha. You know, I think there's some companies out there that may just offer a term sheet and they kind of start the underwriting process. We try to avoid that, where we'll do, you know, all of our underwriting pre-term sheet. And then once we have a signed term sheet, it's pretty standard documentation for our lease agreements, and we can close. I mean, we've closed within, you know, 48, 72 hours after a signed term sheet before, so.
Awesome. And then how long does it take to get the equipment?
Yeah, it just kind of depends. That's, you know, one of the things that has unfortunately come out of COVID is that the lead times on equipment have definitely gotten longer. It depends on the equipment too. If it's coming from overseas, you know, whether it's a canning line or some tanks or a packaging line, overseas definitely is going to take longer. We've probably seen lead times on that stuff double, unfortunately, over the past 12 months. You know, the last couple of leases that we've gotten into, the lead times have been 12 months. So, gotcha. But then again, if it's, you know, within the US, that could be a different story. We just got into a lease where the lead time was, you know, 3 months. So it just kind of varies on the type of equipment and where it's coming from.
Yep. I figured that. Is there any questions that I should be asking you that our CPG brands should be asking you?
Yeah, I think one thing that, again, we can offer two types of leases. One of them is a sale leaseback. If you have existing assets that you've already purchased and they're at your facility or at a Covance facility, we can buy those assets from you. That will provide you some capital and then lease them back to you. And we can also do what we like to call an interim funding or a drawdown type lease, where you're ordering a new piece of equipment that may have a 12-month lead time, and we're able to make those payments, whether it's, you know, a down payment, a couple of progress payments, we're able to make those. And, you know, once the equipment arrives, that's when the lease begins.
Gotcha. Yeah, super cool. Definitely opportunities there from a more flexibility standpoint. And I think it's super, again, creative ways that, you know, an entrepreneur or a brand owner can kind of look at, you know, their assets and, you know, if they are you know, struggling with cash, or it could be an opportunity to refinance a piece of equipment and get some money to help support the business and working capital. So, yeah, so super cool. Well, Brandon, I really enjoyed the chat. As we kind of roll off here, I always kind of ask two questions to the crowd. So number one is, you know, what does one CPG industry do for the listeners out there?
Yeah, you know, I think that if you are within CPG, and this kind of goes to more so on like founders or management teams, I would be more of a learner and a listener than a knower. Those are the kind of people that we like to work with, you know? And that would be my piece of advice on doing more would be, you know, be more of a learner or listener type attitude, as opposed to just thinking you know everything. There's a reason we've got two ears and one mouth, you know? So yeah.
It sounds like great marital advice there.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think maybe I got that from my wife.
Yeah. Hey, I get it. All right. And then the last side, what is that one industry don't?
You know, I would say, I think there's, for brands, you know, think hard about, I guess don't think you need to be in all 50 states. You know, I would rather be partnered or on the equity side, invested in a company that's deep and narrow within their market, as opposed to shallow and thin. You know, I think COVID really hit that home. If you're able, and a lot of brands did have to hunker down and just sell within your state or your region, and you can have a great business doing that. I mean, there's brands that were just in, you know, that are just based in Texas and have sold to, you know, strategics. So just don't think that, you know, you got to be in every state and you got to be in, you know, every Walmart or Kroger or Whole Foods or, you know, in every state. I would just, a word of advice is just, you know, kind of dominate the market that you're, you know, starting out in, and then go from there.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, sage advice, and it's never been easier to be wide across multiple platforms, right, across multiple sales channels that literally yield zero results, more overhead, more stress,
exactly,
cause impacts on your inventory, your supply chain, and all that stuff. So it's always good for people to always kind of revisit that, to think of, you know, maybe I can just dominate here versus these 10 other areas. So, yeah. So great advice. Grant, I really, really enjoyed the chat. I've learned a ton more just about the equipment finance space. If a brand's listening and is interested in learning more about you guys or reaching out to have a conversation or start a relationship, what's the best way to do that? What's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, go to our website, you know, bridgefinancegroup.com. You know, there's a contact form there. I think it goes to my email, and our Vice President of Business Development, Hudson Penn, as well. I'd be happy to talk with you guys. I mean, even if you don't have equipment financing needs, you know, would still be open to chatting with you, with a company or a brand on how, you know, we may be able to help within our own network. We've got a handful of, you know, I think kind of value add partners that we have relationships with.
Yeah, and definitely I could see that's a great strategic kind of intangible in working with you guys, is just the industry experience and the knowledge and the relationships and the network of connections you can leverage people. And it's always good. You know, one thing I'll always say is, you know, kind of the old adage, you know, the banker, you're never going to, when it's raining outside, the banker isn't going to give you an umbrella. But when it's not raining is when you should be asking for an umbrella. So just out there to the folks, creating a relationship up front, not maybe getting or asking right away, but getting your ducks in a row, getting your due diligence items in a row, talking to someone like a Grant or other, you know, entities and businesses out there like, you know, Bridge and stuff, just because it's good to know, especially when you're getting close to that need of financing or debt or equity, to ask, because they have the information, they know you build a trustworthy relationship. So, you know, and I'm sure you can attest to that situation as well.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, Grant, I really appreciate that. Really appreciated the conversation, the information, and the insights. And again, for everybody out there, this is the month end podcast, episode number 23 with Grant Christopher from Bridge Finance Group. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Really enjoyed being on.
Thanks, Grant.